Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this evening's Booker T. Washington Speaks program, hosted by Marshall Washington Cabinets Abui. And we're right now beginning, as we always begin, by asking Almighty God, our merciful Savior and Redeemer, to bless our work tonight as we have this program for the purpose of encouraging a intelligent and sober discussion about the topics that our African-American community need to address in order to ensure our advancement in this United States of America society, but to also to develop a culture among our people, especially among our young people, which is wholesome and beneficial to our lives, so that we can truly have a good future here as citizens of the United States of America and citizens of the world. So we ask Almighty God to please shine on us as we do this work tonight and bless us as we seek to perform the duty which we feel that all adults and all people striving to be adults should take upon ourselves, which is to prepare a better future for those that are coming behind us. We want to just go ahead as we wait for our guests to join the show this evening and share our topic with those that may be listening via internet. The topic for this evening's show is, should teenage parenthood be a concern for African Americans today? And if so, how should we, as African Americans adults, how should we address this concern? What I would like to do at this time is just to share something as we prepare for our guests to come on from one of the major scriptures. And this book is called the Quran. This book was actually a book that came to humanity beginning approximately 710 or 600, pardon me, in 10 AD. And it continued to be revealed to the Prophet of Arabia named Muhammad for 23 years in segments. And in this book, God, who is the author of the book, gives us great wisdom and guidance. And he says in one of the chapters, surely it is God, in the Arabic word that's used is Allah, surely it is Allah who causes seed grain and date stones to split and send out leaves as it germinates into a plant. It is God who causes the seed grain and the date stone to split, to open up and to send out leaves as it germinates into a plant. And then it says that God causes the living to come from the dead, and he is the one that causes the dead to come from the living. That is God. That is Allah, the Arabic word for God. Then how is it that you are far away from the truth? It is God that opens the daybreak from the dark, and it is God that makes the night for rest and the sun and moon for the measure of time. Such is the judgment and the order from him who is the exalted in power, who is the almighty and the all-knowing and the omniscient, meaning that he is ever present and he is all-knowing. It is he who makes the stars as lights for you so that you may find your way with their help through the dark spaces of land and sea. And God says, we detail our signs, meaning the signs in the creation, for those people who know. And it is he, it is God who has produced you from a single person, a single soul. And here, this particular world in which we live, is a place of sojourn or stopover, and also a place of departure. We present our signs for people who understand. It is he who sends down rain from the sky, and with it we produce plants of all kinds. From some we produce green crops out of which we produce grain that is heaped up at harvest time. And out of the date palm and its sheaves or spathes come clusters of dates hanging low and near, and then there are gardens of grapes and olives and pomegranates, each similar in kind, yet different in variety. And when they begin to bear fruit, and they become ripe later. So look, in these things there are signs for people who believe. We began with that because our theme today is about parenthood, which definitely connects with the creativity that is expressed in these last few lines that we read, the creativity of Almighty God. And he has given this procreative power to the human being. And so from this procreative power, many millions and billions of human beings are created from the one single soul with which he began the human creation. And then from that soul there came two, and because of the creative power that God has put in, procreative power that he has put in the human soul and in the human body, many, many billions and trillions of people have come forth. So we know that procreation is such a beautiful thing, and we should think of it as a beautiful thing. Now, I see that we do have one caller who is called in, and I'm going to, in just a minute, I'm turning on this mic for the caller who is called in. So your mic is on now, and I'm going to ask you to come on in just a second and respond to what we read. You got most of it, I believe, and also what we're getting ready to say. One of the big issues confronting the African-American community today, and it's been going on for quite some time, actually, and that is the lack of manhood training or responsibility training in our African-American community for the young men who are going to be fathers of the population of the future in the African-American community. Obviously, many of these young 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, and so forth, young men who begin the procreative process, some as young as 12 years old, don't understand that with that pleasurable experience comes a great responsibility. So I want to just take this time before I ask our caller to respond to share something from a book by a scholar of African-American psychology, particularly African-American psychology, although his range doesn't just limit itself to African-Americans. But this is a book by Dr. Naeem Akbar, which I want to share a few thoughts from this book called Visions for Black Men. This book was published in 1991, and of course there's a greater need even today to address the topics that he is speaking about here. But Dr. Naeem Akbar says, how do we get from being a boy to becoming a man? How do we get from being a boy to becoming a man? The thing that moves us from the male to the boy is discipline that frees the boy from becoming the slave of his male. Learning to exercise control over oneself is transformation energy, the force that transforms the person from being a boy to becoming a man is knowledge. The boy takes his budding rationality and uses it to expand his consciousness. In fact, it is critical that he should be guided in the use of his yet immature reasoning so that it does not get trapped in the form of the boyishness that he had discussed in a previous paragraph in this book. This is why good teachers, fathers, brothers, and uncles are so important. They are the instruments of guidance which help the boys move towards manhood. So many of our young men get arrested in the boyhood stage of development because they are improperly guided and end up being led away to prison or carried away to the cemetery. Consciousness is a natural possibility or potential, but it must be tended and guided in order for it to develop properly. What is consciousness? Consciousness is awareness. What is awareness? Awareness is the ability to see accurately what is. Being able to see accurately means that one must be properly oriented in space, time, and person, which means that the prerequisite for consciousness is to have some accurate image of oneself and the world in which one finds itself or himself. What is the procedure for gaining this kind of information? The most effective way to gain proper orientation is to be thrown into the center of the arena of life. Learning about oneself comes from the confrontation of problems and the development of solutions for those problems. As you face real problems, you are forced to either sink or swim. If you sink, then you fail to make the transformation, or you must be rescued by someone who can swim. If you swim, then the first lesson is learned. This simply means that the process of educating our boys requires that we require of them to tackle real problems and watch them find solutions. They should have early work responsibilities, management responsibilities, and social responsibilities. These responsibilities force the muscles of growth to develop. As the boy begins to take on these responsibilities, he begins to discover the fullness of his potential and can then move to ever-increasing higher horizons. If his energies are only directed towards fun and games, jokes and play, then he continues to recycle in that dimension, and there is no growth possible. And we're going to conclude this reading with this short ending. In order to discover the potential of your bigger self, and he's speaking to the men, the young up-and-coming men, the boys to men, population. He says, in order to discover the potential of your bigger self, you must jump into the water of husbandhood, not just engage in shacking, as in shacking up with someone, because it is a game, and fails to take full responsibilities for your actions. One can learn only if he takes full responsibilities and deals with the consequences of his actions. Shacking offers a trap door. Though marriage is escapable, one does not escape without learning a thorough lesson in decisions, actions, and consequences. So learning occurs even in a failed marriage. Shacking lets you play the husband game without being a real husband. And this is the way of the boys. And he has boys in quotation marks. So a man must understand that his decisions are binding, and there is real import to real decisions. Marriage is such an important lesson in manhood development. It is no wonder that every society requires some form of it. You will never learn the role of husbanding until you decide to be a husband, not a roommate, but a husband. You have got to know what it means to be with this person for better or worse, and not be able to get away on just a whim. You have got to experience the kind of instructional pressure that comes from being bound with the person socially, legally, spiritually, and psychologically. The legal paper is not the key to helping you grow into a man. The key is learning the meaning and responsibility that goes with commitment. It is the commitment that begins to cultivate you. It begins to bring down the rain to the soil and requires things of you to handle the droughts. Because you have decided to be a real husband, you can begin to grow as a man, and this causes the consciousness to expand. You begin to discover muscles you didn't know you had. You begin to understand that you can share yourself and not only be concerned about yourself. You begin to understand that your concern about people can be greater or can be bigger than the concern about your own needs. When you are able to spread your sentiments to include more than just yourself, then you are growing into manhood. So having read that, I see we still just have the one caller who I welcome to the show at this time. And I certainly always enjoy having you participate in our discussion with your wisdom and experience. And so having heard what we read from the Quran, basically talking about procreativity or creativity and the power of creativity in the universe, as we talked about, God has put the power of procreativity in the human being, and what we read about boys growing into men through learning responsibility. Just like to open the mic, your mic is actually open, and ask if you would like to give us a comment. We don't know how many people are actually listening through the internet. We only have yourself and myself now that are on the mic, but we may have, for all I know, millions of people, thousands of people, hundreds of people that have gone up on our internet link. So we're speaking not just to myself, but also to all those possible people that may be listening. So at this time, I want to share the mic. Please go ahead, and if you'd like, make a comment.
First of all, good evening and peace be unto you and the audience. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay, I really didn't hear all of the reading because I was walking from room to room. I did recognize the reading from the Holy Quran, but you know, I was familiar with what you were reading from, but I really wasn't paying much attention because I was walking from room to room. But I understood why you read that and what it was about. And the one that we made you from the one seed, I understood that. But I think what I really liked was your reading from Naeem Akbar. I think Dr. Naeem Akbar is a very, very wise man and not given his due credit, like most of our scholars have, that they would die before we recognize how great they were. I pretty much recognize Dr. Naeem Akbar is one of the greatest minds right now, contemporary, I've known him. I knew him and know him personally. But, and, you know, there may be characteristics that I'm not particularly fond of, but his intelligent mind is great. Now, I haven't read that book, but one of the books that he wrote about the moving from caterpillar to a butterfly, I think is extremely on time for the young people and for parents. Now, the thing about the children and young men and walking off, they were fed so much through TV, and you have parents, let's say the ones between 25 up to 55, they were fed of this go after the money thing, and they did it to their children. The children today, it's all about money. Are you going to pay me? The grandchildren today don't want to cut the yard for mama or grandmother unless they get paid. And the parents went along with it. I think they really destroyed them when they did that. They want to get paid. Now, they're not wanting to get paid to take care of some young lady they may get pregnant. They want to get paid. And I think they did this game with the rappers and letting black young men become millionaires through rapping. That was a disgrace and disgusting, belittling women. And then Michael Jackson had a song out, Billie Jean Ain't My Child. Jamie Foxx had a joke at the funeral and said he had to be one of us because he denied the child. And that's not funny. I remember young men getting girls pregnant and even leaving high school and go get little jobs. They didn't walk away from the children or the woman or the young lady. So it's been pushed to go after money, be famous, and be on stage. And the woman decided, well, they're doing it, we'll do it. So they pushed our girls. I have never seen this Minaj girl perform, but there are times I see the things on the internet, and I can tell she and Lil' Kim and whatever they're very vulgar, and they push those type people. So I think in their minds motherhood is second and third, and it used to be first. So they just changed everything. I think it was a part of the trick in the game that our evil minds among us set up. I think starting with the war on poverty, President Johnson helped the man leave the house. And the welfare stuff. We made it without welfare once upon a time. So it's been tricks. That's all I can say. And you have minds like Dr. Naeem Akbar. They're not paying any attention. Like right now, everybody's being revved up for the Super Bowl. After the Super Bowl, there's another something coming up. And we have so much bombarding us and blasting us that we work hard towards rather than the values that once upon a time given us by our parents and grandparents. But grandma is just as young and foolish and silly today as her children and grandchildren, and she pushes that foolishness. So what do we do? You know, I know there are a few people who are matured enough and understand, and they've made us so bitter toward one another, envious and jealous. Why didn't I think of that rather than thank you for sharing that? I think the time now is to sit down and study how we got tricked and backed up into everything that was destructive to our nation, our nature. And right now, young girls, 8, 9 years old, are on the birth control pill. I mean, it started them off to be addicted to sex. So you got a lot of things coming at the children that need to be discussed, analyzed. And I don't know if that's going to happen. It looks like it's going to be ultimate destruction first before you can catch a hold of all of the madness that is occurring in our society today. Because it's worldwide now. I think it's a separation of wheat and chaff. That may be what there's nothing to do. Look forward to whether you're going to put the wheat or the chaff. I don't know. I'm not an expert on what's going to happen in the future. But I will say, you said your title is going to be, what do you do with teenagers who become parents early? I agree with you that the parents should just go ahead and promote it. They're going to be responsible anyway. Go ahead and promote the marriage and help them get started. And many of them do. They have no choice. You know, everybody don't have big mama to go while you go to college. I think, at my age now, I think everything is going to get balanced out. I think we're going to learn a lesson from what we are seeing today, experiencing, and in the future. It's going to be weeded out, I pray, and what not to do and what to do to have a safe and pleasant society. Because we're at the worst now. It can't get much worse. And so you should grab the mind. Dr. Naeem Akbar just said, you know, get the boys and teach them to be men. And the young ladies used to have to go to refining school when I was coming along if your own parents didn't know how to do it. And they had little organizations where girls had to go to learn how to walk, learn how to talk, and they taught it in the schools. They taught that as part of their subject and homemaking. And they don't get that now. And it would be boring to them anyway. So a lot of things change. Somehow we let a lot of things slip away from us. And those who did want to change it or stop it were crushed. So we got to find the trickster. Who was the trickster that set all of this up? I think that's the most important thing right now. How did we get so tricked? You got little ones saying, there ain't nothing wrong with America if they let a black man make this kind of money. Well, that's who they let make money. In fact, we're learning that's the kind of people they put in positions now. They have academic potential, but not the academics we think we used to talk about. It's the academics that means you're a cadet marching to their cadence. And their cadence is destructive for you. And they put these kind of people in top positions in medicine, in psychology, education, and it's done on purpose. Put pseudo people, no common rational sense, in these positions. Yet they keep their children and their people up out of that particular arena and put people in that's going to help dumb down the rest of society. So I think that's what we need to do. Look at the trick that was put on us and how we can rectify it. And somehow we still make it. We're breathing. And I've been telling girls maybe they should go on and have these babies because the police is shooting them down, especially our black men. So I just say, well, leave them alone. Let them have the babies because they're shooting them, our boys down, our men down. They can be running away, and they'll shoot them in the back. They'll choke them on Main Street in New York. They will, so maybe they, right now, the baby coming and baby having is necessary. We're going to have enough in our society. They don't mind shooting them. They don't mind beating up the women today. We've seen a lot of police now just beat and slap women around. But what day is this? What are you going to do about it? That's my commentary.
Well, we certainly appreciate that. And this wise commentary from a very distinguished educator and one who definitely has worked with many, many young people and understands just in a very, very special way, because of her God consciousness, the need to do something, especially at this critical time, to develop a sense of responsibility in our young people. For those who just joined us, this is Booker T. Washington Speaks. Your host moderator is Marshall Washington Cabinet Sabui, also known to many as Imam Musa. Imam is an Arabic word which means leader, guide, teacher, and Musa is the Arabic word for Moses. And this is a name that I've been known by for 40 years in the Muslim community. And so many people know me as Brother Marshall or Marshall, and there are many who know me primarily as Imam Musa. But I am the eldest great-grandson of the Honorable Booker T. Washington. We began this program about a month ago to engage our community in a dialogue about many of the issues that need serious discussion amongst ourselves. Many of the talk shows that I have listened to are basically entertainment. People come on and they are basically either relaying some drama in their lives, which is of personal concern and definitely has affected their lives. But this particular type of drama often is so shared with the community that it gives people a chance to feel a vicarious relief just to hear somebody else talk about their drama. And so in a way it's good, but in another way it often becomes just another form of dark entertainment. Well, that's not the kind of show that we have here. This is a show to help us to engage in an enlightening experience so we can actually come up with real solutions. So I see that we have now several other callers that have joined the program. And for those of you that just joined, let me just kind of bring you up to date on what we did if you weren't already listening through the internet, because when you come on as a result of calling in, I can see that. And so I know that some of you may have missed the beginning, but we actually began by reading from a spiritual book, a revelation from Almighty God, our Creator, that actually began in the 7th century, about 610 A.D., and lasted for 23 years. And it's called the Quran, and the Muslims, we call it the Holy Quran. But we talked about creativity in creation, that Almighty God is the creator. He's the author of creative power. And then we took that and we began to express that God gave the human creature, as well as many other creatures, what we call creative power through procreation. And then we talked about the importance of developing our young men, the boys, into manhood by beginning to train them in discipline and having a sense of responsibility, especially as it relates to becoming fathers, to engage in the what we would say the practice of taking charge of their lives and being responsible for the women that they come into contact with as mates and the children that are the production or the what we would say the fruit of these unions, that our young men, and this began in slavery because they would match us together, they would throw us in what we would call shacks of copulation so that we could just produce more slave children. And so the men were not even allowed to have a legal sense of marriage with the women, even if they have had some love for the women that they were forced to be with. They couldn't really claim responsibility because these women were the responsibility of the slave masters. And so this has come to a head, you might say, today, because many of our young men feel absolutely no responsibility for the children that they help bring into the world or for the women who are their mates. So this is just to bring you up to date, those of you who just joined our topic for this evening, and we certainly invite your opinions and your expressions on this. Our topic is, should teenage parenthood be a concern for African Americans today? And if so, how should we address this concern? And just want to say this one more thing. I was actually speaking with one of my associates recently. He may be on tonight. He usually is on. He's been my co-host on occasion, and I respect his opinion. But he had said that he wanted to talk about how to prevent teenage pregnancy. He said that he wanted to promote among many of the young people. He's organizing an organization to help young people in the Black community. And he said he wanted to promote the idea of abstinence. And so I replied to him in a conversation about a week or so ago that, in my opinion, was taking the wrong approach, primarily because it wasn't going to work. It wasn't feasible because God put the powerful drive towards procreation in our people, in all people, but in our people. And for many at 12 years old, some even as young as 11 years old, they began to have their monthly cycles, and they began to have this drive, the young ladies, the girls, towards becoming mothers. And the men around the same time, 11, 12, 13 years old, they have this powerful drive for procreation. Now, some may say that they're not thinking about being fathers. They just want to have the sexual release. But the fact is that the urge is something God put in there so that they would want to be doing what would bring about fatherhood. And so consequently, what we've seen is that without having a structure and without having a manhood training program and a motherhood training program, then we have a lot of people that are not actually prepared for this role. So we have this just as an introduction to those who just came on board. So now we do have a couple of callers that I have given you the mic. And so please go ahead. Anyone that would like to speak this time, please join us right now and give us your expressions. Let me do this right now so we won't have two people trying to get on at the same time. Let's take the first person that came on online, which is from the 315 area code. The last two digits of your number are 76. Would you like to comment?
Yes, Sheikh. This is Brother Abdulrahim Martinez, Georgia. Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam, my brother. How are you today?
Good, mashallah.
Thank you.
Beautiful show, beautiful show. I was a little late coming in, but I was able to hear some of the reading that you did from your great grandfather Booker T. Washington, and I listened to the beautiful sister that came on before that gave her commentary. I would like to add, if I may. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين صلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله وصحبه وسلم تسليما أما بعد as far as putting something together to help our youth, one of the things that we have to understand today, and this is just through something that I've learned through my studies, in the dean and in my academic career, is this called emotional intelligence. We have to be able to ingrain that in our youth. There is a hadith from our Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. Some say it's a weak hadith, but it still has some merit. It is attributed to the Prophet Muhammad that he said that when you raise your children, you love them for the first 7 years, you teach them for the next 7 years, and then you befriend them for the next 7 years. So this is somewhat of a model from birth until adulthood. And during that time of love and during that time of teaching, we have to be able to ingrain in the minds of our children to be consciously aware of themselves and of their emotions and to be able to handle relationships. You know, we need to be able to teach them to be conscious of their emotions in their moment, we have to be able to teach them to self-regulate, you know, how well they're able to manage their emotions under pressure. Motivation, such as their drive to transform negative thoughts or situations into positive ones. You know, try to reinforce positive situations in their minds, turn negatives into positives. Teach them how to not necessarily sympathize, but to have empathy. You know, to be able to recognize other people's emotions and respond to them sympathetically. And then help them to build social skills, interaction skills. You know, teach them how to communicate. We lost the art of communication. We lost the art to be able to speak this language that we have properly, or to understand the language that the children speak today so that we can speak to them so that they understand where we're coming from, because there seems to be this gap between the older generation and the younger generation. You know, and there has to be some link of understanding between the two, you know, and it's nothing like having our young people, especially our young men, being able to be involved in a lot of decision making, you know, to show them how we as the elders do things to help them build that type of skill. There's a hadith in one of our books of prophetic traditions from Bukhari, where Our Lady Aisha, may Allah Ta'ala be very well pleased with her, she reports that our Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, told her, "I know well when you are pleased or angry with me." She replied, "How do you know that?" He said, "When you are pleased with me, you swear by saying, 'By the God of Muhammad.' But when you are angry, you swear by saying, 'By the God of Ibrahim.'" She said, "You are right. I don't mention your name." Now here, the prophet is showing that he has perception of his wife. He knows the little things, the little nuances of his woman. And he also validated her feelings by mentioning when she is pleased and displeased, and didn't admonish her for it whatsoever. You know, these are the type of intellectual or emotional intelligence skills that we have to be able to ingrain in our children. And it all starts with ourselves. It starts in our homes, and it progresses in our communities. And I understand that there are forces that have kind of broke us in a way, that have put barriers up to prevent us from succeeding. But we've had this conversation before that, you know, we are people who are being tested, you see. And we will come out of this victoriously. But we have to point the fingers at ourselves and in our own souls and look at how we deal with our children and come together as a community and figure out how we want to fix the problem in our community. You know, we it cannot be fixed. Well, I believe it cannot be fixed on a national or a global level, but I do believe that it can be fixed in a much smaller level, in one's local community, one's local atmosphere. You know, our children need to be introduced to each other, you know, and when they reach that age where those hormones start raging, you know, when the young girls and their periods start coming on and everything, those first 7 years, we have to prepare them to let them know that this is coming. And these are the dangers of it. And these are the positive aspects of it. And to encourage, you know, marriage along the way. Now, we always encourage education. You got to get your education. You got to get your jobs. You got to get your money up, this, that, the other. We always promote the dunya. You see, we always promote the dunya. But at a certain point, we have to promote, you know, what's best for us when we reach the akhirah, when we stand before our God, and we have to answer to him what we did with our children, who he gave to us as a trust to raise. Those children belong to him, not us, to him. And what we did with them during our time on earth, and what we did as a community for all of our children on this earth. You know, so we have to think past dunya. We have to think past the next several years. We got to think beyond the grave. And it starts in the present. It starts in the now. It starts with us in our minds, in our hearts, and in our souls. And to plant that seed in our children continuously as they grow up. So, you know, so that they become emotionally intelligent teenagers and adults who are able to think critically, who are able to work with their hands, who are able to be academic. And we also have to recognize, are our children able to be academic, or are they able to be more vocational? Because not everybody is built the same. So there's a lot of aspects that we have to look at in order to fix this situation with our children. And then we have to bring them in and talk to them. And the conversations that we have with him, that we have with them, has to be any question is on the table. Anything these children and these teenagers want to ask us as elders and leaders, they should be able to come to us and ask us anything, no matter how uncomfortable it may be to our ears, no matter how bad it may sound to us, no matter how rough the topic is. We have to be able to get on top of that and give them an answer that is going to work in this world to help them get to the next in a positive manner. You know, so we have to create these programs in our masajid, in our churches, in our synagogues, in our temples, wherever our places of worship are, and let the youth come in and talk to us. Be there for them. If the parents can't do it, and the parents understand that they can't do it, bring them to somebody that can. You know, we have to be the helping hands for each other. You know, we always pass around this cliche that it takes a village. You know, but there's truth in that. There's much truth in that. And it's going to take that. You know, and I'm the type of person who, you know, I don't like to just say words. I like to do. You know, so if somebody says, well, let's build the community. Let's talk to the children. Okay, let's do it. What time are we going to do this? What are the topics going to be? What are we going to allow them to say? What is going to be the agenda? You see. But yeah, that's all that I have, Jay. That's all that I have.
So that's very informative. And no, go ahead.
Go ahead, Jay. I was just saying, if I had any more to add, I would, you know, come back with another show. But that's all I have.
Okay, well, we'll go tonight, you know, until we exhaust what we have to say. We've actually got 2 hours. We may or may not use the whole 2 hours, depending on whether we need to. But we certainly thank you, and we thank everyone who has expressions that they would like to make. I just want to ask our caller from Pine Bluff, Arkansas, if you would like to respond. I hope I didn't uncover your anonymity by saying town that I know that you reside in, so you don't have to respond to that if you want to just say, I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to reveal who I am. But anyone who would like to respond at this time, to what our brother Sheikh Abdul Rahim just shared with us. Please go ahead.
I don't mind. He certainly had a great idea, and I think they should continue it. You know, go through with what he's saying, that every little bit helps. However, I was naming off the plots and plans and tricks that I've observed through the years. As you said, I've worked with the young people actually all my life. And at the age of 19, I got involved with, this civil rights movement, the SNCC movement. So I've been trying to uplift us for years. And I taught, when I was teaching in San Francisco, this was a permanent job. I recognized the students, the black ones, the white ones, the Spanish ones. And I noticed how the Spanish people did take their children, push them to get married very early. And their family was still pretty much intact, but it's kind of getting out of whack now themselves. They're complaining about it. And we just need to look at the cause, how they have plotted and planned all the way in China, Japan, India. They got the Indian girls now imitating Beyonce. I'm not anti-Beyonce. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think Beyonce's mother and father went to the school that I went to in college. It's just that I know we've been tricked. And you'll get a few, what brother, I can't remember what you said, Abdul Rahim said, yes. But it's a ocean of tricks and plots and plans that came against our community, and we were really forewarned. And this, whoever you want to call him, Satan, Shaitan, they saw what was happening, and they got right in on stopping our children that was going to, there's a young man that was a Rhodes Scholar here. In fact, it was three of them. All three black men came up dead. Mm. Little by little by little. And this stuff is no coincidence.
Mm.
What I'm trying to say is, I think we need to, we've been praying 300-500 years. I'm not saying don't pray, I pray. But we need to study the tricks and the games and get right on that. The people who started the rapping were mostly Muslims. I was there in New York. Over the schools in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And sobbed when the rapping got started. I was in my office on the second floor looking down when the youngsters, Muslim young men, were beginning to take over the traffic. Flavor Flav, daddy, was and is a Muslim. Flavor Flav was brought up in Islam.
Mm.
And Ron DMC and all of them, they were Muslims. And they had messages. They were given messages because they saw it was necessary. Cool and the gang, they're Muslims. Cool and his father and the band members, they were Muslims. And they wouldn't do the rapping. They finally got a hit record, Celebration, and a few others. But they put the vulgar rappers out there, pushed them. And our black men who are angry pass on the anger to their sons and nephews. And because they're angry, it appealed to the young men as Superfly mess. And I never saw the Superfly movie. I didn't want to see it. But I saw them imitating Superfly mess, 60s and 70s and 80s. It's the thing that attracts our people. If you're going to have an organization, I think the tools should be how to point out those tricks and the traps. One of the richest rappers that they listen to today, Jay-Z, said he got 99 problems, but a so-called beef wasn't one of them. Now, that's a famous, he's famous because he's a billionaire. And the president won because he brushed something off his shoulders. You know, we got to look at ourselves. And look at the tricks. All I keep talking about is the subliminal game and tricks. Because it's been a tide of evil pushing back on all this rational talk. They can't hear that if they're bombarded with cartoons and subliminal messages. And that's why your mom told you to read that book, Subliminal Suggestions. That was one of the second or third books he told us to read when he took over. It's the subliminal game that you're not dealing with, and it overtakes everybody. And I'll say this and shut up. I didn't get a permanent job at home. They blackballed me at home, and that's fine. So I began to sub. And I was subbing, and I stopped at a store to get something on my way to teach that day to sub. And the immigrant Muslims had all this rap music on. And it was Ramadan. And usually when I go to any of them, I whip them, I spank them. I said, you cut that stuff off. You know, and I know you know better. I said, you're selling this beer to our young men, and you got all that rap music going, and you're helping the enemy destroy our children. I said, if I pass here again, and I hear that rap music, and it's loud like that, I'm going to cause a boycott. And I said, you know, I kind of led one of the civil rights movements here. I said, you do that again. I haven't heard it anymore. I said, you know, we don't need any more help to tear us down. So I went to class, and I was telling the youngsters, they were seniors. I said, what kind of music? I was telling them about the old school music when the men serenaded us and made us feel good, feel like women. I said, young man was rapping a song and said he pulled up to the curb and said, get in the car, B. Y'all know what that is. And the kids laughed. The girls laughed and the guys laughed. And I said, yeah, are you people crazy? You mean to tell me a boy is attracted to you if he tell you to get in the car, B? And they were laughing about it. That's where their heads are. And then we got immigrants and other people coming in helping us to be crazy and stupid. So, I mean, I think we need to sit down and organize a plan to stop the games that are being played on us. I'm old school. That brother sounds pretty young. I've been at this since I was 19, and I'm 73 years old. I don't have much patience left. So until in the games, we were warned by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We were warned by other people. The man that started Negro History Week. This is Black History Month. He said in his book in the 30s, he said, the black man is miseducated. I think, you know, I had to tell my PhD friends once, go back and read that book. You got miseducated. You didn't get educated. I think that's the problem, you know, the miseducated PhD. Most of them are snitches and agents that's teaching in the college. They did a favor for Satan and they got a job teaching. They couldn't care less. And I had to learn that the hard way. And I taught on the East Coast, West Coast, Midwest. I've lived in Minnesota. I've lived in Portland. I've lived in San Francisco. I've lived in New York. Practically lived in Chicago. You know, all of us did because we had to go out there all the time. I've seen in the civil rights movement. I traveled to the South. I was happy with the voter registration. I was there. I've been in the room with John Lewis, in the workshop with John and Stokely and Kwame Nkrumah and Marion Barry. I mean, I've been there, done that. I'm tired looking at our game, the game being pulled on us and played on us. And I just think the thing to do now is to look at the plots and plans and schemes and block them out, knock them out, see them coming and work on that. Because they got game, they got all kinds of tricks that's got our children. The parents were so busy trying to beat the Joneses, they stuck the children in front of TV, video games, mom and dad working, and grandma. And the kids didn't get the discipline that they were supposed to get and the nurturing they were supposed to get. It was difficult for me to stay in the school system because the children were so starved, starved. And I get letters and calls from students I taught 30-some years ago thanking me. But I mean, it almost killed me. You can't nurture every one of them. They are so starved. They know something's wrong, but they don't know what it is. So I think we need to teach towards what is natural and is their nature, and also fight Satan's plans a little more. It used to work, Bible school, but that's not sufficient for these minds today. Deborah Blair said, we got a new kid on the block today. And I'm going to shut up for tonight. I'll listen to everybody else.
Well, Shay, would you like to respond to that? I don't know how long we're going to go tonight. There's something I want to share before we close. Again, from Brother Naeem Akbar, that actually relates to what we've been talking about. But I certainly would like for you, Shay, if you'd like to respond to what our dear sister just said.
SubhanAllah. That was beautiful. I am young. I am young, ma'am. I just turned 46 last month. But yes, I understand everything that you're saying. I really do. You know, I've sat and I listened to my parents and my grandparents while they were still alive. You know, my grandfather, Reverend Jacob Evans, over in Philadelphia, in South Philly, and in New Jersey. He did some civil rights work, especially trying to help desegregate schools and with integration, amongst other things, because there were some issues. And I'm not going to take up a whole lot of time of what was going on, but he made some positive changes in local areas in New Jersey and South Philly during his time. But I understand. I really do. I've, you know, studied the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I mean, Allah forgive him his mistakes and grant him paradise. You know, I've read Message to the Black Man. I've studied with the Nation of Islam study group when I was in Hawaii under Minister Louis Farrakhan. I've read some of the works of our great Imam, W.D. Muhammad. May Allah have mercy on him. And everything that you've said is definitely correct. There are games that are being played. You know, I'm not going to deny that at all. The Shaitan, the Dajjal, whatever you want to call him, he's been here for a long time as far as I'm concerned. He's been plotting the downfall of many of us for a long time. And he was able to make us uncivilized in certain ways. You know, I have this book, and the sister may know it. It's from an Eric Byrne, who wrote a book called Games People Play. Makes his handbook on transactional analysis that goes into the mind of why people play the games that they do. Why do they have to do these tricks or use these emotional tactics to make you do a certain thing? And one of my teachers, Imam Fode Grame, one of the key things that he told me last year about music, and it's amazing that you brought that up. The thing that he told me about music is that music has a way of moving the soul, whether it could be in a good way or it could be in a very bad way, you know. And depending on how it's used, you can manipulate many people through it. Others may not understand that. Some say, oh, it's just music. I just listen to the beats. I just like dancing to it, or I listen to the lyrics or what have you. Either way, it's touching their souls in some kind of way. And there's a message that's being heard, because they repeat the lyrics. And some of them act out the lyrics. Some of them live what was in those lyrics. You know. But at the same time, they're working for record labels who are manipulating them the same way that we've always been manipulated. always, you know, I don't know how to get around that except to, as you were saying, dear sister, is, you know, we got to study these tactics. You know, we have to study this man. We have to study the Shaitan. You know, we have to be very vigilant and look close at what they have done. And Dr. Naeem Akbar is a great example of where to start in studying, you know, the psychology of everything that's going on, because a lot of us are still walking around with this slave mentality, and we still haven't been able to break the chains of it, as Dr. Naeem Akbar had mentioned in his book. You know, we still weren't able to lay that horrible foundation down and away from us. And we see it. We see it. You know, that's why we are so behind. And we've been kept behind for a purpose, for a reason. You know, like Imam W.D. Muhammad, may Allah have mercy on him, you know, had mentioned that this, you know, that the sun will rise in the west. You know, when he took it from Hadith about the end of days, that the sun will rise in the west. And I believe that the sun that rises in the west is us, the people in this wilderness called the West. It is us, you know, that will be raised up to help deal with this. We, I believe, are the only people that have been built to deal with this type of situation. You know, our dear Imam Musa Abu, you know, I've learned so much sitting with him. That's a lot. Between you and him, there's a lot of history there that people my age and younger, we need that. You know, we need those teachings. We still need MGT, GCC. We still need some things from FOI. You know, we still need the things that Imam W.D. Muhammad was trying to teach us to help continue to break these chains, you know, and keep our youth connected with us and pull them along with us and teach them, you know, the struggles of what they're going to go through, the struggles of what our ancestors went through to get to this point, and to let them know that we are strong enough to get through this. You know, we didn't go through over 400 years of this mess just to fail. Allah has a purpose for us. And I believe deep in my heart that we will be the ones in the West, and not in a violent way, but in the most intelligent and direct way to deal with this devil, to deal with this Satan, to deal with this Antichrist, whatever you want to call him. You know, because he is really showing his tail. He is really showing his tail to us, you know. And he finally got a way to just be blatant and open about his hatred for mankind. You know, and it's going to take us, it's going to take people like you, sister, it's going to take people like Brother Imam Musa and many of the other great imams that might be on here, the other sheikhs or ustada or sisters that we have that have come through the civil rights struggle, that have come through racism, that have come through social injustice. You know, you've all lived that. The new people here, they don't know anything about that. But you all have lived through that. I've heard about it, and I've suffered from some of it, you know, but not to the extent that my elders, you all, have. And we need you. We really do. We need you. We need you badly. That's all I have, Sheikh Musa.
Well, that's well said, and we share the same feelings. And I just want to interject something. I think that we're probably going to close in just a minute, because I want our dear sister to have the final word, as they say, But I just want to mention something, actually a couple of things. One is that going back to our topic about teenage parenthood, and as I had told my associate, he didn't come on tonight, but hopefully we'll hear from him next week. But I had mentioned to him when he told me that he wanted to come on and talk about the solution to teenage pregnancy being teenage abstinence. And I told him, I said that I didn't really believe that we should be trying to stop teenage pregnancy. I told him, I said that Imam Muhammad said that it was natural for teenagers to want to have children, although it seems to be inconsistent with the American or the Western culture in these times. But I remember even in my lifetime as a child, I talked to ladies who started having children at 14 and their husbands, because that was the key point I was trying to make to him, that they did get married first and their husbands might have only been 16 years old. But, you know, these women did not go to high school. These were old country people, as we would say, who started working in the fields when they were 5 and 6 years old and continued to work in the fields as long as they lived. And they might, if they were lucky, go to a one-room shack called a schoolhouse for 3 months out of the school year. And I've been in some of these buildings, and that's actually what they were shacks. And I've gone in there, and this is during the Civil Rights Movement. I traveled throughout parts of the South, and I actually saw the kinds of conditions that our people were so-called educated in. And this was back in the early 1960s, and these places that were called schools still existed. And I saw little children sitting in there with dim lights trying to learn how to read. But the point that I really want to get to is something that's happening today. Last year, during this month, Black History Month, as it's called, I was invited to go to one of the oldest high schools, and it's 99.999. I would just go ahead and say 100% black population. And I was invited to speak about Booker T. Washington. And the seniors were the ones that were actually given time off from class to come hear me speak. And they arranged for me to speak in the library because I said I don't like speaking from stages. I like to be close to the people so that I can see their eyes and I can see their reaction, and they can interact with me. So they had the seniors sitting in not really a semicircle, but they were in front of me in somewhat of a circular form. And so I had the chance to actually engage them. It was a wonderful experience. And when when my talk was over and the students went back to their classes, the teacher who had set this event up for me came to me, and she handed me this large, large volume. I have it in my hand right now. It's called African-American Literature, and it's chock full of very, very great literature from the African-American experience. I'm going to read just one short poem by Claude McKay because it speaks to this theme that we've heard in the last year or two, make America great again. And it's kind of what I'm going to say is kind of like a satire in response to that, that Claude McKay, a Harlem Renaissance writer, back in the mid-1920s, wrote. But this book is actually almost 1,000 pages long, and every page is actually over, I'm looking at it, not counting the index, it looks to be, oh, I would say 1,020 pages or so. And she gave me this book, and she said, I'm giving you this book as a gift. I managed to save it. And I said to myself, why would she have to save it? This should be one of the texts that they should have a great supply of. She said, we used to have a lot of them, but the Board of Education decided to take them out of the schools. Now, I said, why? Of course, I didn't have to think like that. I knew the answer because I know what's happening in America today. But let me just share just a few. I won't take the time to tell you all of the authors, but you have people like Alice Walker, Maya Angelou, Toni Morrison, and you have, I'm just going to name something I know you're probably familiar with. You have the slave who was educated that wrote his story, the narrative of the life of Alaudao, depending on how you pronounce it, I say Alaudao, Equiano, Benjamin Banneker, Phyllis Wheatley, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass, Zora Neale Hurston, and Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, Ida B. Wells, Charles Chestnut, Paul Lawrence Dunbar, James Weldon Johnson, Langston Hughes, Claude McKay, as I mentioned, Gene Toomers, Conti Cullen. You even have lyrics from Bessie Smith's Backwater Blues, Robert Johnson. Of course, we should be familiar with Robert Johnson. He's one of the what I would call juke joint impresarios. I love that old music from back in the early 1900s. It's music that doesn't have a lot of accompaniment, but some people would say that it really touched the real core of the pain of our people. But you have Richard Wright, Chester Himes, and I could go on and on. But the point is, Ralph Ellison, James Baldwin, Martin Luther King, etc., they took this book out of schools because they said that our children don't need to learn that history. They don't need to be acquainted with that kind of literature. And that's what is happening today. And the reason why it's happening is because the people that control the education of our children in the public sector feel fear that if our people come into the knowledge of self and become acquainted with the things that, as you mentioned, Sheikh, that as a young person you may not have personally experienced, you may have never seen, as I have, a cross burning, a KKK lit up cross burning. I saw that as a child, 12 years old, on the campus of Tuskegee Institute right before they burned the chapel down that the students had built. So these kinds of experiences are reflected in some of this literature, and now they don't want the black children to know about these things. This whole diversity approach is, let's not talk about the harsh things that have happened that white people brought to black people's lives. Let's all get together and let's all be friends. But yet, deep down inside, the white people take their children out of the black schools because they don't want their children to be friends with black kids. But yet, they don't want the black kids to have that feeling of power that comes from knowing that we survived all of these things. So I'm going to just read this, and then I'll be quiet and turn over to our sister for the close. We won't go the full 2 hours tonight. I think we've done well for what we have done, and we'll just pick it up. Maybe next week we'll talk on another subject. I'm thinking of another subject. But this is something that Claude McKay says, and this is actually a satirical response that I'm presenting to our audience, which could be global because people can go up on the internet from all over the world and hear what we've talked about tonight. But, you know, you heard the slogan, let's make America great again. And I said on one of my previous programs, let's make America great at last, because you can't have greatness without nobility, and you can't have nobility without humility, and you can't have humility unless you recognize the omniscient on what I would say great power of our Creator God. If you don't have that kind of humility to bow before Him, who said, I made all your shapes and I made them beautiful, and treat people with fairness and justice, and you can't be great. And America has never achieved that. So it's not about making America great again. That's really a lie. It's really about making America white again, and white meaning let's destroy the power of all other people of color so that we can be able to continue to enslave and exploit the dark people of the world like we used to do. And that is not going to happen, trust me, because these people, I've been throughout the world. I've been to Africa. I've been to parts of Asia. And these people are not going for that trick again, because in order to get the people to go along with them, first of all, they had to find puppets and Uncle Toms that they could buy to be able to enslave their own people. And I can guarantee you all over the world, as soon as the young Turks, as we call them, the Mau Maus, as we call them in the 50s, as soon as they see those Uncle Toms rise up, they'll kill them on the spot. So they're not going to be able to use our people in those countries that are trying to be free from those folks again. But they think so. They think so. So here's what Claude McKay says. America, although she feeds me bread of bitterness and sinks into my throat her tiger's tooth, stealing my breath of life, I will confess, I love this cultured hell that tests my youth. Her vigor flows like tides into my blood, giving me strength erect against her hate. Her bigness sweeps my being like a flood, yet as a rebel fronts a king in state, I stand within her walls with not a shred of terror, malice, or a word of jeer. Darkly, I gaze into the days ahead, and see her might and granite wonders there. Beneath the torch of time's unerring hand, like priceless treasures sinking into the sand. So yes, okay, make America great again, but make it great for real, not just the lie that you've been saying about it was great, because it's like priceless treasures sinking into the sand. So I'm going to finish my monologue with that. And the sister, my dear sister, would you like to conclude our show tonight with a comment?
You know, brother, both of you made very good points. I just think we need to develop tactics that will combat the trickster's tricks. That's just the best thing that I can think of. We've done it all. All of those writers you just mentioned, I knew. I didn't know this Robert Johnson, and you into more music stuff than I am, and I didn't know one other person, but during the 60s when we were fighting to get in these schools, many of our students got in and they were flunking. And they called me while I was in Louisville, Kentucky, teaching, you know, here and there. I taught at Duval Junior High where Muhammad Ali went to school. He came there and came to my class. They called me and asked me if I would teach in the University of Louisville in the summertime. And I used every one of those people you just named other than Toni, because she hadn't got famous and Alice Walker wasn't there. And one other author you mentioned I didn't know, but I knew every one of those others. And I used those books to teach the black students who were failing, and Kentucky didn't want them in there in the first place, and they were flunking them. And I had a whole big classroom of these men, young men, boys, and girls. And when I put them on these writers and had them to read those writers and set up some lesson plans and stuff, they're level of comprehension rose. So it's back to what the young black Muhammad said, peace and blessings, Allah upon him. Knowledge of self and being exposed to other literary minds and developing tactics that will stop the game that the trickster plays. I think then we're on it, because we've done everything else and our ancestors have done everything else and those writers have written everything you can write. Now we just need to just sit back and develop tactics that will stop the overflow of the game that has spread it and that prevails all across this country, now the world, and beat the satanic minds at their own game. And we can do it, just like the brother just said. We made it 400-500 years. If you make it through this madness, we're the greatest.
Well, that's a good close. We're going to close now. Stay on the line for just a minute, because we're going to play some war music here, if you want to call it that. You don't have to listen if you don't like music, but we're just going to share with the rest of our audience a little war music just to end our program tonight. Thank you. thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for all of you who joined us from afar and from near. We have enjoyed the fact that we think you're out there. We believe you're out there listening. You were quiet tonight. Hopefully next week you'll come on so we can hear your opinions and your expressions. With that in mind, we'll now shift to a more quieter version as we close out. So thank you again, and may God Allah bless you. Good night. We're signing off now. Good night, and have a great weekend, the rest of it. And may God bless you as we continue in this journey towards our destiny. Ameen.